Welcome to the Red Light Report,
your number one source for all things red light therapy,
where you will learn how to optimize your health, wellness, and longevity with the power of photobiomodulation. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Belkowski. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Red Light Report. In this episode, the interviewer is across the pond, if you will. That's if you live in America. She is Angela Foster, and she is a nutritional therapist and health and performance coach. She is a former partner in a large law firm who left the world of corporate law after suffering burnout and recovering from a serious illness in 2014. As a mother of three young children, Angela is on a mission to inspire and educate women on how to stay healthy and energized while meeting the demands of combining a successful career with a vibrant and healthy family life, and as a regular speaker to large corporations in helping them optimize the health and wellness of their employees. Angela hosts the High Performance Health Podcast, which is a top-rated podcast in alternative health. The podcast has a highly engaged listenership who are looking for tips and hacks to optimize their health and performance in life and seek out products that are discussed on the show. Angela's also got a very devout following on Instagram under her name, Angela Foster, and needless to say, is a perennial biohacker. So without further ado, Angela, thanks for joining the show. Welcome to the Red Light Report.
It's awesome to be here, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. Let's dig into your background story and really, like we alluded to in the bio, the health ups and downs you dealt with that's really led you to this career path that you've put yourself on. Because when I was looking over the website and learning more about you, you've been through the proverbial, you know, gauntlet as far as, you know, health issues have gone. So tell us about that and really what that did for you, how it opened your eyes to health and wellness to get to where you are today.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So when I was, as you were saying in the intro, I was practicing as a corporate lawyer for many years. And that, as you'll probably be familiar with, involves a lot of weekends, a lot of working all nights, progressive, like successive nights in a row. And I think my first kind of brush with health was in my 20s when I was diagnosed with PCOS and endometriosis. And I was in need of surgical treatment for it. So that was sort of making work quite difficult. And when I had the surgery, I wanted to understand whether there were any kind of nutritional links or at the time, I didn't realize it, maybe genetic links to what I was struggling with. And I knew that we had a strong family history of diabetes, type 2 and chronic kidney disease. And I felt that, you know, when I was maternity diagnosed with insulin resistance, that my life was sort of going in that direction. So I started sort of dabbling in nutrition for myself at that point, trying to fix that, which I actually successfully did. And it allowed me to have my three children all naturally. But I did have them because of the intervention of surgery very close together. So they were all born. I had the three kids within 4.5 years. And I had something known as pelvic disproportion, where you can't deliver your children naturally. So the first child was an emergency C-section and the other three were booked in. So this put a big load on my body in a short space of time. And I think with the background of the very long working hours that I'd had as a corporate lawyer, I made partnership when I was 8 months pregnant with my first child. That really set the stage for the burnout that was to come. And it was physical and mental. That was really where I ended up over a period of the ensuing years. And I think that I hadn't really done any work in self-development at that point. The only contact that I had growing up with sort of any form of spirituality was actually being brought up in a strict Catholic faith. And I definitely moved away from that because I didn't feel that was, you know, in line with my own belief system. And so I unexpectedly suffered with postnatal depression and I didn't really have the tools to deal with it. So I then had quite a lot of psychotherapy to get over it. But after my third child, it became very, very entrenched. And that's when I was diagnosed with chronic depressive disorder and possible bipolar. I was actually on bipolar medication. And I was really, really struggling with my mental health at that time. I did turn quite a bit to running and trying to just kind of get the endorphins in naturally. I was doing a lot of work. I was obviously on a lot of medication, which I saw really as something I took very reluctantly just to help me do the work. But the thoughts of suicide were just kind of growing and growing and getting worse and worse. And I was really struggling with my mental health. And that's when the kids got the flu, I ended up then with double pneumonia and hospitalized. I was actually rushed in with suspected lung cancer and had a CT scan. But it was really actually the pneumonia had just advanced so far that my lymph glands were so swollen. And that was really the defining moment. I think most people that come into things like biohacking have some kind of story because they feel like they haven't got all the answers from the traditional medicine. And I think I still feel very lucky for that experience because it really helped me to learn to be with myself, I would say, first and foremost. You know, I was trying to run away from myself. And there in the hospital, you know, when I was hooked up to drips and on nebulizers and things, it was kind of like, what am I doing? Like, I'm trying to exit life. And here I am. You know, they came in, I was neutropenic, I had viral and bacterial pneumonia. So antibiotics alone wasn't really going to cut it. We were needing my own immune system really to kick in. And I guess I had a sort of kind of transcendental moment, really. I think it was the lucidity of those, or the fevers I had gave way to that lucidity. And I definitely felt more in touch with myself. And it was a big wake-up call. It was like, here I am thinking my kids are going to be better off without me, or have been having those thoughts because I just felt the wrong person to be in their lives. So I loved them so much and I was just felt so depressed. But then now that might all be taken away, actually, I want to see them grow up. And I just felt this overwhelming need to step up to the plate. I've got to be there for them as a mum, watch them grow up. So initially, when I came out of hospital, it was a journey to recovery. You know, I was fortunate that I do have asthma now, but I have a limited lung damage. And I was trying to figure out how can I get really, really healthy in body and mind. And so then I was like reading everything I possibly could, you know, books, scientific research papers, everything I could. I started studying, became a health coach, and then qualified in nutritional therapy. And basically, I started working with clients. And then it just grew into this bigger mission of like, you know, I'm not the only one that's experienced this kind of thing. How can I really help other people understand that health is a truly holistic approach? And so it's kind of just grown from there. And it's become really the love of my life, just helping others really do the same.
That's such a powerful story. And like you said, getting into this biohacking realm, most people have this aha moment, or in your case, like a pretty pivotal life moment. And I'm guessing this is your case. You really didn't have that much background in health and wellness. You were a lawyer. So it was on your own admission and on your own really desire to learn about different approaches to health and wellness that's led you to where you are today, which is an expert in health and wellness. So it's pretty amazing to hear your story and where you are today.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're all always learning, aren't we? It's a lifelong, and particularly in things like nutritional science, things are always developing. So, yeah.
That's part of the fun, though, is you're never going to attain perfection, but you want to be as good as you can, given the information you have and the choices you can make at this moment in time. So, like you said, it's always a learning process. And in a way, that's kind of part of the fun. And with that being said, you know, you're a biohacker. You're very entrenched in this holistic health and wellness and nutrition. So I always like asking people with your type of expertise, what does your morning routine look like? And what are some of your daily biohacks or health habits that are non-negotiables for you?
Yeah. So I guess my morning routine is a big one for me because that's something I developed in the very early days, initially actually listening to Hal Elrod and the Miracle Morning. Just it was, but that was all about getting my mind right. So I realized that, you know, just pushing out really high intensity exercise sessions was going to burn me out again pretty fast. So I was looking for something different. And it took me a long time because when the kids were young, let's face it, you're not really going to be able to develop a consistent morning routine because you never know when they're going to wake up. So getting that hour before them. But that's easier now because my kids are a bit older. And so my morning routine is what I believe is the most important part of my day because it's what really sets me up for the day ahead. So I'm very kind of particular about it, but I usually will get up, I guess it varies a little bit with weekends, but somewhere between 5 and 6. I'm pretty consistent because that's been shown with sleep that the more consistent you are, the more in alignment your circadian rhythm is. And as you know, the better your health outcomes. And so the first thing I do is to take charge of my mind. So I think about what I'm really grateful for in my life when I wake up. And then I will, most days, I will do a meditation first thing. And I find that that's just because of your brainwave state upon waking. You know, you've got those slower brainwaves. You can easily kind of slip into, sometimes I'll do self-hypnosis, into that state and really visualize my day ahead as I want it to go. And then I usually will study, actually. So I will study either some kind of spiritual material or some health-related material in my own field. I find that that quiet time is really important. And then after that, I will usually do some fasted movement, something quite gentle, whether that's stretching, going in my sauna. I do my red light every single day. I actually credit that as being a huge thing that, you know, as someone actually who has struggled with, you know, hormonal issues, that is probably one of the secret hacks to clearing up skin when you have, you know, like with PCOS, you just have a higher androgen status naturally quite often. And that can really aggravate my skin and lead to breakouts. And I found red light therapy amazing for helping with that. And also just all around energy and mitochondrial benefits. So I'll usually do red light therapy in the morning after a kind of cool shower. Which is what I like to take. And then I have some black coffee and then I kind of, you know, have family breakfast and get on with the day and start work. But it is about, usually for me, it's incorporating certain pillars in terms of gratitude, meditation, some fasted movement, in that inner connection, some education, I think is so important in the morning, because if you don't do it then, you're never going to do it. And I think that we always want to be constantly growing, right? We can look at nature to see that we want to be on that growth cycle as much as we possibly can. So that's a really important thing for me. And as I say, I do mix it up. I will do red light therapy at least 5 days out of seven, and then maybe 2-3 times a week, I'll head in the sauna. I would like it to be more, but as girls, it involves an entire hair washing experience that isn't necessarily going to be an everyday thing when I'm busy mom of three kids as well.
That's awesome. So you get a great combination of both some mental health and physical health. That's a great combo. And I just want to circle back to the very beginning when you said the consistency with sleep is very important. So that kind of beckons a question on my mind. What about as the season changes and the sunrise and the sunset differs? Because of course, you're not close to the equator. So just like me over here in the US in Montana, the sun goes down much later now and it gets up much earlier now versus the winter where the days are much shorter. So with that being said, does that change your wake up time or do you keep it consistent regardless of your local sunrise and sunset?
So I find it plays around, it does shift it slightly, but I think it makes it a little bit harder. So for example, as you will know, like here in the UK, it doesn't get dark quite often at this time of year until close to 10 p.m. at night. So actually what I find is I will naturally go to bed a little bit later just because I haven't really acclimatized or wound down earlier. But then I also find that the benefits, which you do get from things like sauna, of that the infrared rays from the sun, you know, in my sort of shift protocol that I talk about, the F is fuel, and it's not food because it's not just food that fuels our bodies. It is light, as you know. We have these five types of bioactive light. So I actually find that I need less sleep. In the winter, it can feel harder to get up, but then that's when I find creating that environment at home with things like red light therapy helps me make that transition, because when it's still dark, I'll be using that. It's much easier for me to go to bed earlier. So I would say the critical difference would be in the bedtime as opposed to the time I wake up. And I think I get more sleep in winter because I'm ready to actually go to sleep a little bit earlier.
Gotcha. That makes total sense. And I don't want to overlook your mention on red light therapy, but we'll get to that a little later. Let's first move to what you just alluded to, which is your SHIFT methodology, which is an acronym SHIFT, which stands for sleep, hormones, insights, fuel, and training. This is something that you use with your high performance clients, whether they're executives, high end athletes, or otherwise. So let's go into each one of those and kind of pick them apart and how you utilize them and then help your clients optimize each one of these. So let's start with sleep, which we've kind of talked about, but if there's anything else on the table that you want to talk about, let's go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that sleep is probably the most overlooked thing in terms of performance. I think people are willing to give it up too easily, or perhaps reluctantly, maybe even they do, but they're trying to fit so many things in that we think, well, if I just have less sleep, I can get more done. And in reality, I think there's a really delicate balance. So I think, you know, to a degree, that's true. If you were sleeping 10, 12 hours every single day, then maybe you would have less time available to make progress on your goals. And we don't necessarily need as much sleep as that. However, I do think that prioritizing and understanding how to sleep smarter is really key. So looking at those metrics, I have recently been tracking it both with a Whoop and an Aura just to compare and actually see my REM sleep and my deep sleep, because both of those areas, as you know, are really important. Deep sleep's super important for recovery and, you know, those antioxidant processes that take place in the body, things like lymphatic drainage, which helps to wash our brain of that buildup of tau proteins and clot. There's so many things that happen in sleep, and recalibrating our system, it helps us burn fat better. We have less food cravings. You know, we produce growth hormone. We're going to look younger. Like, it's not, when you start talking to people about sleep and they realize all the things that it does, it's often not that difficult to sell to them that they need to get more. And REM sleep, as you know, is really important for emotional regulation. So I think it's not always for some people, and I see this on their genetics when I look at people's DNA reports. Some people do seem to need more sleep. They're not just saying, actually, I always need 8-9 hours for no reason. They do need more sleep. And some of us are lighter sleepers. You know, we have chronotypes in terms of whether we're a morning person or a night owl. So I look at all that data and then work with clients really to optimize it and find things that can enhance it if they're struggling in any one area. And for me, with sleep, like, the magic combination for me at the moment is actually taking magnesium coupled with some wild mushrooms. So I'll take some reishi and some chaga at night. And that is very kind of anti-inflammatory, very calming on the nervous system, and very alkalizing on the body. And I find I get really, really good sleep metrics with that combo. Waking up at the same time every day is key, because that's what keeps you in alignment and stops you having that grogginess in the early part of the week when you're catching up from a weekend. So I like to start with sleep as the foundation, because I think it makes absolutely everything we're going to talk about in the shift protocol so much easier to do. If you're underslept, you're going to find it hard to do the other parts. So that's where I start.
That makes sense. So with your paradigm and your program, sleep is the foundation. You need to have that locked and loaded before we start talking about hormones and insights and otherwise, correct?
Yes. And sometimes we'll come at it from an angle, like sometimes I'll be incorporating all five of these metrics we're going to talk about with clients in slightly different ways as we go along the way. It doesn't mean that I say, right, we're going to do a month of sleep and a month of hormones, because actually they're also interlinked, right? Your balanced hormones will impact your sleep and vice versa. So it tends to be in a more kind of, I suppose, a process of osmosis. I look at and gather the data on them so that I can really help hone those areas as we're going through the program. And then hormones really just control everything from our behavior to the way that we feel, the way we show up in the world, our health. You know, we're looking here not just at things like estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone in terms of sex hormone production, but also things like ghrelin and leptin and feeling when you're hungry, when you're full, you know, whether you're craving certain foods. We're looking at kind of thyroid health. You know, these are so, so important. And it's almost, I think, more important, rather than going in and just analyzing one area, is actually to put in place the nutritional, the lifestyle practices that actually encourage good hormonal function. And then that sort of starts to fall into place. You know, moderating cortisol is really, really key, because that can just throw all of the other ones off so easily. And the body has its own mechanisms for trying to protect us when cortisol is really, really high. And so commonly we'll see that on things like the Dutch test, for example, if that's happening. But I think when people understand the principles of optimizing their hormones and how stress interplays with that, they start to feel a lot better, a lot more relaxed, a lot happier, and they have better brain function, much better memory and cognition, and they can kind of show up as the best version of themselves.
That makes total sense. So along the lines of both sleep and hormones, my question is, you mentioned magnesium and mushrooms. That's right. That's a unique one. How often do you encourage or utilize melatonin to increase sleep or help people fall asleep?
So I don't use it very much. Here in the UK, melatonin in any kind of significant dose is actually available on prescription only. You can get it in kind of microdosing, like 0.3, which can, you know, be enough in some people. I like to actually go it in from a more lifestyle perspective. So are they getting their exposure to light during the day to help encourage them make melatonin? Have they got the right sort of the gut health that can, you know, 90% of serotonin is produced in the gut. And we know that serotonin gets methylated into melatonin. So are they actually producing enough serotonin in the first place? How's their mood? How stable is that? Are they limiting light exposure at night and creating that transition between work? Are they using lifestyle fitness, mindset activities that lower cortisol? Because we know that cortisol and melatonin have an inverse rhythm. So if cortisol is high, melatonin is going to be low and the other way around. So I tend to come at it from much more that perspective. So they're not reliant on taking something like melatonin. And I think when you can produce it yourself in sufficient quantities, it's such a powerful antioxidant hormone as well, that it's a really key thing to health.
Yep, that's a good reminder, that last part, where melatonin, while it's been sensationalized to help you fall asleep, it does have those antioxidant and anti-inflammatory and anti-cancer properties, which I was reminded of when I interviewed Dr. Tyler Jean a couple of weeks ago. But I like your perspective. Do things in your lifestyle that allow you to produce it endogenously before you have to make the leap, potentially using it orally. Let's move into insights. What does that mean? And what does that look like for you and your clients?
So that kind of comes down to the level, I guess, that the clients want to go to and what they're willing to invest in terms of outside resources. So insights really are gathering insights about your body so that you can biohack it, right? Which is hacking your biology for the best outcome. And so they range from things that you can do at home, like we were talking earlier about the Oura Ring and the Whoop strap. So tracking your strain and your recovery, tracking your sleep and your metrics, looking at things like, I find the Aura even with female health is super useful because that obviously will monitor your body temperature by 0.1 degree. So I can actually see from an Aura ring over a month, you know, did that woman ovulate that month? Can we, you know, if we start to see her temperature rising in the second half of the month, there's a pretty good indicator that we're getting good levels of progesterone production and that she did ovulate. So these tiny metrics that we can gather very affordably at home are super, super useful and they're non-invasive. I also encourage people, if they've got any kind of blood sugar issues or they just want to gain even more insights into how food is affecting them, to do something like continuous blood sugar monitoring. Again, a super easy thing you can do, gather a lot of data on. For men, I say, you know, do a minimum of 2 weeks just to understand and make as many notes as you possibly can and journal on it. For women, I would always encourage them to do a whole cycle if they're still menstruating, because it can vary across the month. We also look at, I do a lot of work, as you know, with DNA testing, because I find it's a really good like foundation of pointing where might we need to look. So rather than ordering a whole load of labs, we can actually look and see what baseline genetics, how well does it look like you methylate? How well do we think your detox pathways work? You know, what's your kind of predisposition to HDL and LDL cholesterol? What's your carb tolerance? What's your fat tolerance? It's a really good signposting to actually look, right, well, maybe we need to dig a little bit deeper here. And then, you know, I do things like gut testing, particularly if it's needing and the client is symptomatic. Things like metabolomics or the Nutrival test, where we look at organic acids. So functional lab testing I tend to focus on a bit more, just to help clients really, really optimize. And that's so then personalized to them, because it's very powerful as well if you have like organic acid testing data alongside DNA, because we can see where do they need support right now? What, like, where's it playing out? How are their DNA being expressed in real time? And what's their baseline vulnerability? Is this something that, you know, we just need to fix in the short term? Or is it actually, no, maybe they've got impaired SNPs at methylation, and that's something we really need to focus on for health optimization for a lifetime. So it's really gathering a whole range of insights, depending on how deep the client wants to go and also what underlying health issues they may have at the time.
This podcast was brought to you by the Longev Revive Cream. If you haven't heard of this cream before, go back and listen to the podcast interview with David Horanek, one of the people that helped create this amazing cream. The cream is specifically developed to enhance red light therapy treatment sessions. And not only that, but improve vibrational healing from the frequencies of full spectrum sunlight. The Revive includes special ingredients such as photodynamic amino acids, which helps convert UV light to red light. It increases production of this thing called fibronectin, which is said to be the holy grail of anti-aging. And then there's astaxanthin, which has been shown in clinical studies to increase skin moisture, moisture retention, and elasticity. There's turmeric, which contains an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and antimicrobial properties. There's copper peptides, which also has antioxidant, anti-inflammatory effects. C60 has high antioxidant power to prevent skin aging, 172 times more than vitamin C. And then there's also geranium rose, shungite, humic acids. And most of these ingredients are organic and they're all high quality. So if you want to check this cream out, go to longjev.com, that's LONGEVV.com, or you can also find it on biolite.shop. That's biolite.shop. So you're doing a lot of analytics from different standpoints, like you said, whether it's the Oura Ring, wearing something that gathers those biometrics, DNA testing. I think you might have mentioned the Dutch. So depending on what the client wants or needs with your expertise, you're getting a lot of analytics to really pave the way for what decisions need to be made versus guess and check, if you will, like just trying to get on the newest fad diet, seeing if that works or whatnot. You're just much more sniper, which is fantastic. How often do you do these tests? Like if you're doing a DNA test, is it just the one time just to figure out what SNPs they have and, like you're saying, what they need to better analyze and decide where to go? Or are there any tests or blood panels that you do, let's say, every month or every quarter or every, you know, biannually?
Yeah, I think, like, for example, so with genetics, it's with the one I use, it's full exome sequencing. So it's really thorough and it includes any kind of further updates as they come through in terms of panels. So that they only need to do once. And as you know, it's super easy to do. You do it at home. It takes you 60 seconds to do a saliva test and you've got all this data. With some of the other tests, it really depends on the individual. So, for example, we might do a range of tests and then we need to test and actually see how things are working in 3 to 6 months. But generally, the protocols, if we know the protocol that we need to use and the client themselves are feeling better, there isn't always a need to really just go and have some confirmation of that. But then there are blood tests, for example, that I do think, you know, and you do these often with your medical doctor anyway, annually, that you do need to do, like, you know, over 40, for example, checking your triglycerides as you're a woman going through perimenopause, you know, looking at and thinking, is what I'm doing from a natural therapy perspective working, or am I at that point now where I need to layer in maybe some bioidentical hormones, for example, and I work with a functional medicine doctor to do that. That level tends to vary on the client and what they're trying to achieve, and to a degree, I guess, on the budget that they want to put into it.
Gotcha. That makes total sense. Let's move on to fuel. And like you alluded to, fuel doesn't just include nutrition from food, also other aspects like light. So let's hear what fuel is.
Yeah. So for fueling your body, I like to use the acronym FLOW because it makes it an easy way to remember it. So FLOW is basically food, light, oxygen, and water or hydration. Those are the things, those are the four key ways that we fuel our body. So from a food perspective, I think it's about understanding that there isn't a perfect diet, but there is a perfect diet for you. And that may change across your lifetime, depending on, number one, your genetics, your gut health, your environment, where you're living, what your ancestors ate, and also what stage in life you're at and what your current goals are. So we know that, you know, if somebody is, even if they are genetically very sensitive to carbs and they're more likely to be predisposed to blood sugar issues, if they're doing a high volume of exercise, they're still going to be able to cope with more carbohydrates than somebody who is much more sedentary. Similarly, you know, in women in particular, as they get into their 40s and 50s, they often do need to go a bit lower carb because they naturally develop a little bit of insulin resistance and inflammation. So that's really understanding, like, how can you fuel your body in the right way? And I have a program that teaches people exactly how to do that in line with their genetics. And then the second pillar is light. And I think a lot of people overlook this, is understanding what healthy light exposure is and where you need to get that. So in limited amounts from the sun, because we don't want to increase our risk of things like skin cancer, but also using things like getting that infrared, near infrared and red light from sauna, really, really important to our health. and to those detoxification processes in the body. And then the next one, oxygen, is just making, and actually on light, what I should say as well is avoiding too much junk light exposure, like getting natural light coming in, you know, even opening the window, light bends, it let it come into the room, and relying less on these kind of LEDs and things, which actually are more and more being shown to be damaging to our health, and even the light from computer screens, and then regulating that light, as we talked about in the evening, with maybe a yellow lens glass in the spectacle in the afternoon and then red in the evening. And then oxygen is really about correcting people's breathing. So I'll often see that on their Whoop and their Aura, that if they're highly, highly stressed or they've got any kind of breathing difficulties, like blocked nose, if they're mouth breathing, their breathing rate tends to be a lot higher. And you can see that go up to kind of up to sort of 19, 20 breaths a minute in someone who's highly stressed. And that will in turn be feeding their anxiety, because their body is perceiving that as an anxious state, particularly when they're upper chest breathing. So it's about correcting that and making sure they're getting that correct exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide into their cells. And then the last one is water. So looking at hydration and understanding that it's not just about drinking lots and lots of water during the day, but making sure you've got the right mineral balance. So using things like a full mineral salt, maybe taking something like Kinton to replenish electrolytes, particularly after something like sauna. And also looking for sources of, we know that, you know, easy water, we make that in our cells when we're exposed to things like red light and infrared light. And we know that that is actually easier to absorb, right? That charges our mitochondria. And also it's easier to absorb water from food. So looking for what we call easy water, which is that gel-like substance that we find naturally in things like chia puddings, you know, cucumbers, those kind of foods, where it's naturally present. So it's about putting that whole kind of system together, because that's when you feel really charged with energy and can perform at your highest level.
That's pretty comprehensive with the fuel. I like that though, because you're hitting all bases. And to circle back to light, and I meant to mention this when we're talking about hormones, we were talking about cortisol and melatonin levels and how they oppose each other. Well, like you alluded to with the light just now, if you expose yourself to the blue light technology, especially at night, then you're going to inhibit your melatonin production and increase your cortisol levels. So you're going to have a difficult time falling asleep, and especially getting into that deep sleep. So in this modern day lifestyle, not only are we kind of hiding ourselves from that full spectrum sunlight, and especially in the morning when it's mostly red and infrared and at night, but we're surrounding ourselves with this non-native, typically blue lit technology, which is wrecking our cells. It's decreasing the efficiency of our mitochondria. It actually lowers our ability to produce dopamine, and it dehydrates our mitochondria. And to your point with water, the more easy water we can get into our bodies, the healthier and more efficient our mitochondria are going to be. So we really need to flip the script on this light environment that we currently live in, which is way too much blue, not enough red and near infrared or full spectrum sunlight, and then optimize the timing. Get away from the blue lit technology at least an hour or two before bed, exposing yourself to natural light or some red light before bed. So all those are great points on the fuel. Let's move on to the last one in the shift protocol, which is training.
Yeah, so that's a two-pronged approach, really. That is, in fact, I'd say three. You could actually split it into three, because I think the mind and the spirit are slightly different, but I think you need to train your body, mind, and spirit on a daily basis. I think that's so, so important. And for, you know, some people may not be particularly, like, they may not believe in God. You don't have to necessarily attach to a religion, but understanding that inner connection with yourself through practices like gratitude, journaling, breath work. It doesn't even have to be meditation, but doing certain breath work exercises and really nourishing your soul is so, so important. And that was kind of the missing pillar that I'd found a lot in all of the training I was doing, is really understanding that that was the thing. I had to go inwards when I was coming out of depression. And at first it's so hard, right? It's so painful because you don't really even like yourself. You don't want to go there, but learning to love yourself. So I think spiritual connection with yourself and with others, really, really super important. So that's one part of the training. And then the other is training your physical body and your mind. So looking at things like training your mind is really important in terms of like managing your thoughts. We can talk about things like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy or neurolinguistic programming, but actually physically training your mind and thinking like a high performance thinks, talks to themselves and speaks. And really being that best friend and mentor to yourself is really important. And doing things that educate you daily so that you're always growing and protecting yourself against things like dementia, which for me is really important because I do carry one copy of the APOE4 gene, which predisposes me to a greater risk of dementia. And so that part of training your mind, I feel, is really, really important, but also training your physical body. So making sure that you're moving your body, making sure that you're getting up, you know, like one, if, you know, we're on a podcast right now, but I will then get up and move around and do something, just having movement snacks throughout your day. Everyone thinks about, oh, I must go to the gym, or I must do, go for a run, or go and work out in some way. But what about the fact that you need to be moving your body every single hour, you know, spending a portion of your day, which I do, at a standing desk station. So you're moving more, sitting on, I'm on a chair at the moment, but right next to me here that I'm tapping is a Swiss ball, right? That just makes me move more when I'm doing that. Also getting up and going and doing some pull-ups, swinging kettlebell around, something like that. A kettlebell you can have even in an office environment beside your desk. As long as you've got a little bit of space, you can swing it. And if you can't do that, you can do body weight squats. You know, that's that nobody can, you know, unless you've got a physical injury, you can easily do with very limited space, just some simple body weight squats. You know, get up and go and walk around the office, go and get some water. I think that overall movement, we totally underestimate for our health in terms of blood flow to our brain, so we perform better, but also our body and our cardiovascular health and blood vessels. So that's really important. And going for like a postprandial walk, if you can, going for an early morning walk, this actually all leads to huge improvements in terms of staying lean and healthy, because you're in a kind of fat burning state all day long. And then on top of that, I talk with clients a lot about how to train their body, but making sure they get enough recovery in. I find with high performing clients, to be honest, they are most often doing a lot of physical training. They almost need to understand recovery more. And I think that again is where something like a Whoop or an Aura is really key, because they just, you know, they're inclined to say, well, I'll just push through it, I'll push harder. Whereas actually now there's an independent metric saying, no, you're not being lazy. You actually do just need to recover, and you're going to, you know, you're going to get better muscle development. You're going to feel better. You're going to get better results on your training. So it's kind of like train hard, but recover harder, and just understanding that balance, and then specific exercise protocols that you can use to enhance mitochondrial health. You know, alongside things like red light, you can actually do interval sprint training, which has been shown in the research to enhance the health of your mitochondria and the density. So you've got, you know, our energy comes from our mitochondria. So I do all of that, and then looking at how to, you know, increase muscle mass and at least preserve it, because as we're aging, you know, from 30 onwards, we're fighting that battle constantly of holding on to our muscle mass and making sure that we've still got really good metabolic flexibility. So I incorporate all of those as part of the program as well.
There's a lot of good points there. A couple of my favorites were the movement or exercise snacks, if you will. That's a good little way to think about it. Because like you're alluding to, especially if you're a high performing or highly successful individual, you feel like you always have to work and accomplish all these deadlines and whatnot. So it's very easy to push movement aside and just keep pressing on with whatever task you have at hand. But it really doesn't take much movement, whether, like you're saying, it's squats or push-ups or going outside for a quick walk. It's the consistency that makes the difference. Whereas if you have it in your mind that it must be a structured workout at the gym, but I can't do it today, so I'm just not going to move at all, it's easy just to push it off until the next day. So just incorporating those small little movements consistently is huge.
And Tabata is really good for that as well, don't you find? Like, I think, you know, say, I don't have time, Tabata exercise is really good for that. So when people feel they've got time, like anyone listening, if you try this, even just do two Tabatas back to back, which is 4 minutes, where you do 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, repeat that through 8 times, do one set of Tabata on just squats and one set on push-ups, you're going to have to go to knees. You will 100% feel it the next day. And that only took you 8 minutes. There's little things that we can do all the time, can't we, to improve it?
Yeah, that's what I do, is Tabata on my stationary bike, especially if I'm in a fasted state before I'm going to eat, just to kind of, like you said, upregulate the, like with the sprints. It's the one way in the research that shows you're able to improve muscle mass and fat loss at the same time. Whereas when you lift, it's just muscle mass. And when you do cardio, it's just fat loss. So sprinting, or like you're saying, the Tabata sets are a really good way. About, you only need to do it once a week or so to get these marvelous benefits of losing fat and building a little bit of muscle at the same time.
So let's lastly, we're running short on time here. So let's talk about red light therapy, because you're a pretty devout user. You have a lot of experience with it. So let's talk about how you learned about it and how you implement it with yourself and your clients and what type of results you've seen.
Yeah, so I first came across it actually at an event that I was at, and I was just like, wow, the light is so beautiful. And I'd done some reading about it. And I just initially, I was like, this is something I really want to incorporate. And I've incorporated it in different ways. So at the moment, I think with anything that you're going to bring into your life, you've got to make it easy to do, because otherwise it's never going to become a regular habit. So the thing that I found for a long time, I was meditating in front of it, because then I was kind of really like stacking my hacks in that way. What I do now actually is, because I'm doing a different, slightly different style of meditation, is I actually do, I have it in my bathroom. So it's right when I come out of the shower. So there's like no excuse. I can just stand in front of it. It's super easy to do and accessible. So that's how I incorporate it. The results I've seen are amazing. I just find it's absolutely incredible for energy, for helping. I've seen, you know, really good results with reducing when someone's got an injury, for example, and they're trying to heal it, much faster healing rates. If they've got any scars on their body, and there's so much, it's not just me saying this to anyone listening, right? There's so much research that backs up everything that I'm saying. So, and you can go and check it out. There's just so much behind it, but even scars. If you want to heal a scar, for example, it heals so much better with red light therapy. Depending on where you're standing, obviously, if you're closer to it, which I'll do on some treatments, it's going to go deeper and it's going to enhance the health of your mitochondria. Whereas if you're a little bit further away, you're going to get more of those skin benefits, which is amazing for collagen production, for clearing up things like acne and for healing scars. So I've used it, you know, I've used it in clients that have had burn injuries. I've used it in clients that want to increase time to failure on exercise, which it does really effectively when they use it before, for kind of reducing inflammation. A lot of people get problems with their knees. It's really effective for that. And so I think it's like one of the best investments that you can make, because it actually, if you go to a clinic, it's quite an expensive way of trying to treat it and you don't get enough exposure. So I kind of feel like red light therapy is something that everyone should have in their house and use. And people can start with like a small lamp if they need to, and then sort of work up from there. But obviously full body exposure is ideal.
And just to clarify, with red light therapy, you're including red and near infrared with your treatments?
Yes. Yeah, I do both.
Do you always include both, or do you differentiate? Let's say if you're doing skin health, do you do just red? If you're doing, let's say, brain or mental health, do you do just near infrared? Or again, are you using a combo always?
I always use a combo, because I think, why miss out on one? I may as well get the benefit of both. You know, it's a little bit like, isn't it? Like you could play with the distance so that you're really honing the treatment to what it is that you want. And you could play around with that, you know, having one or the other. But then I kind of feel like it's a bit like if you look at exercise and you're doing a certain number of reps, right? You may be simulating more of those slow twitch muscle fibers if you're going for more repetitions or longer sprints, right? But actually, you're still stimulating both systems. It's like you're never just burning fat or carbs. I think so. Why not make the most of it? It's just that you might be focusing on results on more on one area at a time. But yeah, I generally use both. In the sauna, actually, as well.
Is your sauna just dry or is it wet?
My sauna is an infrared sauna, but it does the mid, near and far. So it doesn't have the red light. So then you can add the red light in. Yeah.
So do you actually have a device in the sauna?
Yeah. So I've sometimes, a smaller device, just taken it in there.
Like a portable handheld one?
No, a bit bigger than that, but you can just sort of rest it in there and get the benefit.
Gotcha. And so this was the brain fart I had a moment ago. When you're talking about exercise, that more is not better, because people, especially the high performing people, the mentality is more is better, more is better. I don't have time to recover because I need to do more, more, more. That's the same principle with red light therapy, that more is not better, because just like exercise, just like eating, just like fasting or drinking water or whatnot, it's kind of a biphasic dose response where there's a sweet spot in the middle, and too little is not a good thing. Too much is not a good thing. It's about finding that dosage that's just right. So both for exercise, because like you said, if you exercise hard, you need to recover harder. And especially me as a physical therapist, I run into a lot of those types of people where it's just like, they don't think they have time to rest or recover because they need to exercise. They can't lose those quote unquote gains that they've worked so hard for. When in fact, if they properly recovered, they would actually get more gains quicker while exercising less. So it's about shifting that mindset. And that applies to all aspects of life, not just exercise. I mean, we could go there with just being efficient and effective with your work and your brain capacity. If you're always just plugging away, you're going to burn out. And you're a testament to that with your story. But if we take these little moments to have our self-care and, like you said, gratitude or these movement snacks or sleeping, getting enough sleep, which is a form of recovery, then we're actually going to be more effective and more efficient in the short term and long term. So everything you've talked about has just been great information and a great overall perspective on health and wellness and longevity. So I really appreciate that. But before we leave red light therapy, you've already said it kind of, but what would you tell people who are kind of on the fence? They're starting to learn about red light therapy. They're seeing all these amazing benefits that are touted, which seems like everything. It starts to sound like a snake oil pitch. But like you said, it's backed by thousands and thousands and thousands of clinical research studies. So again, if there's someone on the fence and they're wondering, should I invest in this technology or not? What would you tell them?
I would say to them that there's very few kind of biohacking toys, quote unquote, that you could invest in that wouldn't give you as many results as you can get with near infrared and red light therapy. That's the key thing. I just think, and yes, go and look at the science because it 100% backs it up. But what can you do that is a relatively small investment cost compared to enhancing the health of your mitochondria, being able to exercise harder and push harder, being able to burn fat better, being able to stimulate hair growth, being able to stimulate collagen production in your skin, and so much more, relieve pain? Like, what thing can actually give you all of that in one on demand? You don't have to wait for the weather to be good to go out. It's just there for you every day that involves like a 10-minute treatment time. It's not even that long that you need to spend in it. So yeah, for people that doubt, it's probably my favorite toy. And I think it is eminently more affordable than something like a sauna. So it's a really easy thing to get started with. It also provides a really nice light in the room. And sometimes you can even put it on just to offset the light of your blue light with your screen. If you are having to work in the evening, it's something that you can have on before bed. You know, my kids enjoy it. Even my dogs go in front of the red light. So I can't recommend it highly enough. And that's a completely like independent, that's just from me saying it. I have no affiliation with it, but it's just something that I found to be super useful.
Well said. I mean, it's so versatile, very safe, low risk, very, very high reward. So couldn't agree more. There's so many ways to use it, non-invasive in the comfort of your home. The options are endless and the health and wellness benefits are quite endless as well. So, Angela, where can people go to learn more about you, what you're doing, and potentially book a session or look into one of your webinars?
Yeah, for sure. So my website is angelafosterperformance.com. And on social media, I'm probably most active on Instagram, which is at Angela S. Foster. They can connect with me there. Also, my podcast is High Performance Health, which is pretty much on any platform. And then if they want to do kind of something fun and just go through that shift model themselves in terms of getting a health score on where they are in every single area, so in sleep, hormones, insights, fuel, and training, and then get an overall health score with a fully personalized report, they can just go to www.yourtotalhealthcheck.com. It's completely free. Fill it out, get their score. Let me know what it is. They get a good free personalized report as well. And it's a fun quiz to do. So it'll show them where they can improve and some strategies to do that. So yeah, those are probably the key places to find me.
That's awesome. You heard it, guys. And I think I speak for everyone when I say, I really appreciate your time, your knowledge and expertise, Angela. I learned a lot. You're very articulate and know your stuff. So thanks again for your expertise and sharing your knowledge today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Mike. It's been my absolute pleasure.
My pleasure. For Angela Foster, this is Dr. Mike Belkowski signing off of the Red Light Report. Everybody have a fantastic week.
Thank you for listening to the Red Light Report. If you like what you heard today, go ahead and leave us a review on iTunes and other podcast platforms to help spread the word, so other people can learn about the many health, wellness, and longevity benefits of red light therapy.
If you're looking for more educational content, check out our Instagram page at biolight.shop and our YouTube channel, Biolight. I'm Dr. Mike Belkowski, and I'll see you on the next episode.